Hello, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome to another episode of Kayak Fishing Weekly, the show on the Sirius Angler Network dedicated to all things kayak fishing. My name's Justin Largen. I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a fun show planned for today. I'm going to be talking to a friend of mine, guy that has done a lot of travel around the country, guy with a very impressive, impressive background. He has done an awful lot, sort of jack of all trades. Good friend of mine, Lance McCorder. So without further ado, welcome, Lance.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I cannot complain at all. I'm just getting back to Virginia from further south with some nice weather, but I cannot complain at all.
Nice. Yeah, it looked fun down there, man. Some big fish. And that's such a fun area to cruise around. I was really hoping I could make it out this year, but yeah, life calls.
You stay busy. So I want to make sure correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to hit on all the different things that you've done. Because I've met a lot of cool people over the last few years in the kayak fishing world, the tournament world specifically. But I think you've got to be like, it's like that, the Dos Equis commercial, the most interesting man in kayak fishing. So you soldier first, yeah. Then fireman, we'll say contractor, executive protection.
Yeah.
Chef.
Yeah.
Not just any chef, like appeared on the Chop TV show.
Yeah.
Restaurant owner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously kayak fisherman. What am I missing? And most recently, tackle store and kayak shop owner. Yeah. Very, very impressive.
I keep busy, man. It keeps me out of trouble. You know, it's like something idle hands, you know, like.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Now, I was very impressed, and I'll have to have you on again at some point just to talk networking, because I was palling around with you last year at the Classic Expo, you know, right. When you floated the idea of, you know, you're doing all this other stuff already, and you floated the idea of, hey, I'm gonna open a tackle shop and a kayak mm-hmm. store. And I couldn't believe how well you networked. It was a good learning experience for me, how you were just walking around, talking to different people, introducing yourself and kind of laying the groundwork. And I was thinking, sure, he's going to start it, but it's going to be, you know, 6 months, a year. And dude, it was not long at all.
3 months,
before I see your grand opening. And it's very impressive what you've been able to do. So,
well, thanks. I mean, the planning went, you know, a bit before, you know, but yeah, I mean, opportunities like the Classic, especially when you're getting to fish in the Bassmaster Kayak Series championship. It's a great opportunity, you know, and I mean, any opportunity to get out there and meet people and network, I mean, it's everything. In the outdoors industry and the culinary world, I mean, that's how I wound up on, you know, Food Network and stuff like that, is because when they look at you as a chef, they're like, oh man, this chef's so awesome. I really want him to be on the show because he's awesome. He's a great cook, you know. They want you on there because they know that you have a network that's going to drive more viewers to their show, you know. So it's a one hand washes the other kind of thing. So, I mean, being able to create that network and just meet people and create great relationships based on, you know, just honesty and hard work and setting clear goals and expectations and things like that. I mean, that's huge. That's the secret that a lot of people miss in the fishing world, is that when you get out on the road like we do, you know, and you start traveling around the country all the time. If you're relying on those checks, you know, those checks and trophies to pay the bills, you know, that doesn't really do it. You know, it's like you gotta understand that you're in sales and you're in marketing and you're in networking, and that's your job, you know. So that was a fun day. I mean, we went and we met a lot of people, you know. I mean, that was and we found a lot of people that knew us and just, you know, hey, good to see you, buddy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a blast. I'm looking forward to it this year. We'll be there, 2 months, 3 months? Yeah, I mean, it's coming.
Yeah, March is coming up fast. Yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit, something that we always ask guests on the show, you know, people that are appearing for the first time, how you kind of got your start in the fishing world. Was it, you know, as a kid, like a lot of us? Was it later in life? When did you get that bug?
Yeah, man, some of my earliest memories in my life are fishing. You know, I had down in Texas, we call them, you know, Mamaw and Pawpaw, my grandparents. They had a little like, you know, trailer park home on the lake called Lake Kiowa. This, you know, had a dock and those rusty old lawn chairs that they'd sit in and fish. And my mamma would put me in a life jacket, put a dog leash clipped to the back of it, and she'd run it around the chair, her lawn chair, so I couldn't reach the edge of the dock. And they just gave me a cane pole and you know, a bobber with a minnow on it. And I'd just sit there and catch fish all day long. And I loved it, you know. And, you know, we grew up fishing in East Texas, where both sets of grandparents were from. Out here in the area that I live now, Tyler, there's a little town out west of here called Athens. It has just a killer lake. They've had an MLF event on there. You know, Lake Palestine, Lake Fork when it was new. I mean, it's just like we grew up fishing. And my pawpaw, he was real big into brim, crappie, and that was his thing. But I always liked bass, you know. So I'd be in there digging in his tackle box and trying to find a worm hook and like one or two old cream worms down there in the bottom, like the OG, like 1970s, you know,
with the multiple hooks in them.
Yeah, like dry down the bottom of his box. I'd be grabbing that thing and dragging it through hydrilla. And I just had a blast, you know, on like a Zebco, like little push button rod. And I mean, I just loved it. And had an uncle with a stock tank pond and a big log in the middle of it. And as a kid, I remember just going, one of these days, I'm going to cast all the way to that log. And that's where he's going to be, you know. And I had like a spook that I had pulled out of my uncle's tackle box. They're just like, you know, don't hook yourself with that. I think it was about 7, and finally got that thing one summer out there by that log and hooked. I mean, I have no idea how big it was, but it was a big bass, you know. And man, that was it. I just loved it. You know, throughout life, you know, fished around the world. I was fishing in the Persian Gulf. We were fishing in, I lived in Hawaii when I was in the Navy, you know, like, I mean, so we were offshore fishing there. And, I mean, I got into kayak fishing. I was working overseas, like you mentioned, doing, you know, kind of high threat government protection work. And I would rotate home, and I was living down in the hill country of Texas. And I watched some rando, like, late night satellite TV show with this guy. And, you know, he was kayak fishing. And I was just like, this is kind of cool. You know, I didn't know they made those, had a little seat on it and all that. And, you know, it was an old Jackson, Cuda. And I was just like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And so I went looking around and I couldn't find one anywhere. And I wound up getting like I think it was a Perception, like sit on top, like wet butt, like sore back, you
know, like, one of those.
And I was like, man, this sucks. You know, I'm like, I loved it. It was like, it was really cool. I loved catching fish off of it, but man, it was uncomfortable. And then finally, you know, I got to digging around and, you know, this may be 2011, 2012, and found somebody that sold Jackson's, and I wound up getting that Cuda 14, and man, I just fell in love with it. And then, you know, often between the chef life and stuff like that, when I came home, you know, moved around, moved to Dallas, worked when I was really in my learning period of cooking, and sold that Cuda because, you know, we're living in the city. We didn't have anywhere to keep it. And I was working million hour weeks and just, there was no fish for, you know, probably 2 or 3 years. Then we moved back out here and immediately, you know, here in Tyler, I mean, said we're right in the middle of Fork and Palestine and Rayburn,
the mecca of bass fishing.
Like, you know, we've got every lake here, and that's why I opened my restaurant out here, is because I really missed fishing. You know, it's and this is like mecca for it. So, you know, I'm still out here, still paddling around and motoring around, and then yeah, now it's, you know, Bassmaster and try and catch some hobies here and there, and anything else we can. Did the native No Limit,
those are fun.
Texas Bass Nation just kicked off its first kayak series event late last year. Jumped in on that, running a tournament trail out here now out of my shop, ETX Paddle Sports, which is like East Texas Paddle Sports. So I mean, yeah, in it, love it.
Awesome. I think we met. It was one of my very first tournaments. I think it was maybe my third national tournament down in. I'm blanking on the name of the lake. So I think they called it just the Trinity River Tournaments. I think that was the first time I ran into
you. Yeah, that was one of my very first ones too. Yeah, that was KBF on the Trinity River. And that was the day, I think it was like Jody and Guillermo and Matt Scotch and all them put up like I think it was 112 or 113 inches or something, but it was like mind blowing. Like nobody had ever seen a tournament like that before. And we both almost pulled checks on that one. That one was close. Yeah, that was, but we were right there in line next to each other. That was cool.
It was a fun event, but yeah, so we've been doing it, I guess, about at least the tournament side of it, about the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. And I guess I want to shift to that a little bit. So it's still cold in a lot of the country. You know, it's back here in Virginia. It's, you know, not as frigid as it was a couple of weeks ago, but it's still, you know, not the pleasant kind of weather that that we had down in Florida. But the, you know, down where you are, I mean, it's, you can pretty much fish year round, right? It's
absolutely.
Is it pretty good still wintertime?
I mean, this is the time of year where Texas will cycle through four seasons in 4 weeks. So, I mean, it gets really crazy. So we just came out of a very hard freeze and a very brutal couple of weeks, went immediately into rain, then warm rain, then it cooled off and got to cool rain. Now it's just kind of cold and wet. And then the last couple of days, it's been 72 and sunny and, you know, just balmy, beautiful weather.
Very nice.
So it's just that kind of weather that's just weird enough to just make everybody sick all the time in the winter. Which shout out to my wife at home because she feels like crap right now, but love you. But I mean, we get to fish all year round. I mean, absolutely. We out of ETX Paddle Sports, we run our monthly series that runs, you know, 12 months out of the year. So, I mean, it's, we're always opportunities for fishing. Only once or twice has it ever been, you know, really bad. We had that Bassmaster event a couple of years ago that was on Lake Fork. And I mean, we were all busting ice on the lake on day one. That was pretty weird, you know, like until the sun got high and then that little thin layer of ice went away. But, usually we can fish all the time.
Okay. So technically I could, Northern Virginia, you know, depending on the weather, we'll have some lakes freeze. Down where I am now in Roanoke, It's pretty nice. We don't have anything that's really frozen, or if it is, it's just a little small ponds and it's not for very long. Mm-hmm. I'm just too much of a sissy in the cold. I end up having about a month where I don't get out for very much. So getting ready for the first tournament for me was kind of, it's always this task of sort of cleaning up the stuff that I never got around to from the end of last season and organizing. And I always end up, like I found, you know, after this last trip, I brought too much stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, typically at the end of a tournament season, I've kind of figured out what I need to do and limited the amount of tackle, but I always struggle for that first tournament, you know, figuring out what do I need. And I know maybe you don't have that long off season, but is there anything that you do sort of to get ready for that first tournament or for the first, I guess for the kickoff of the season, or maybe when the fishing starts to get really good and you're going out there a bunch.
Yeah. I'm in that phase right now with the Bassmaster and Lake Murray coming up. So I'm getting ready to head to South Carolina again. And I love that lake. I've got some experience on that lake. And, I think that we all just kind of put it off, that dreaded, it's kind of like spring cleaning when we're coming out of winter, we're getting into the beginning of the season, or sometimes we're even, you know, still locked down in the middle of winter. And the last thing you want to do is go out to the garage or go out to the shop and start digging through, you know, 3,700 boxes and the big gorilla totes that we all take around with us and going, all right, what do I need? You know, it's like, you know what kind of fishery you're going to. You usually do. A lot of us have some history on these lakes. We've been to Harris Chain or we've been to Kissimmee. We know what we're going to throw. But I think what we really do is we all tend to kind of procrastinate in that hibernation era that we're in now, you know, and then all of a sudden it's tournament time and you're like, oh God, you know, and you just throw everything in the car. And I think that kind of, really, really trips you up when you get there because, you know, you don't really have a clear picture of what you're doing or a clear workspace. You know, as a chef and a restaurant guy, we have a thing called mise en place. It's a French term and it essentially means, you know, all things in their place, you know? So it's kind of like applying that and make yourself a little checklist or go back and when you're doing map study, go through those notes that you took from the last time you were out there and, you know, put on a jacket and go out there in the garage and do a little work. You know, it's because, I mean, really, I think that's probably it. It's just kind of a little procrastination. And the next thing you know, the event's there and you're just like, I don't know, you know. So, I mean, yeah, right now I'm kind of going through, you know, I'm lucky enough that I have the install day here at ETX Paddle Sports. And, you know, so all my stuff, I've got my corner over there. That's the boss man's corner, you know, and it's just everything, you know, and,
good to be the king.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, you know, I've got a nice warm space that I can go through everything, but, you know, I'm going through my boat right now. I'm going through that gnar, and I'm going through, you know, the webbing. I'm going through any of the rope rig stuff, you know, or pull cords and electrical, you know, making sure that everything's great, you know, make sure you're bringing your batteries inside if it's cold where you live and they've been in the garage, you know, maybe kind of cycle them a little bit, throw them on the charger, or throw it on the motor and let it run for a little while, or just, you know, fire up your graphs in the garage or whatever, put them in standby, let the batteries draw, and, you know, put a few cycles on things. Just make sure things that are awake, just like you are. You know, you're going to do some exercises to wake up your brain. You're going to start watching YouTube videos or map studying, or you know, on the mapping apps and researching. So, I mean, you know, you got to warm up your gear too.
Yeah, I definitely I had one of those uh-oh moments getting ready for Florida. You know, I didn't check the trailer, and we had a little bit of snow up here, and I remember, you know, a year ago in the springtime, I went out and I was actually thinking a little bit of ahead. I got out there and took a look at the trailer, just making sure everything's in order. And I realized I got a flat, and it's I don't know if it was a slow leak or basically the tire was worn down anyway and needed replacing, but I had enough time to actually get it done. And then it was, I think, the same morning that I was, you know, I've got the car all loaded down. It's like, all right, now time to go hook up the trailer. And I was like, wait a second. And, you know, fortunately, you know, everything was as it should have been. Mm-hmm. Nothing was, you know, I didn't have a flat or, you know, any other problem with the trailer, but I could have got myself in a real jam. Yeah. Where, you know, now I'm cutting into my fishing time. I'm having to delay the trip. And it definitely, I know from your background, you're a lot more prepared than I am, but
I think I've you know, been around long enough, and I've been through enough space, and, you know, being a military guy where we know that two is one is and one is none is the expression that we always use, you know, but we don't always have room to carry two. So you have to really make sure that one that you have is good, that trailer or what have you, you know, everything's been sitting there. So, I mean, yeah, make those lists, check them. I mean, go over your truck, make sure your oil's changed, make sure you change your oil before you leave, because, you know, who knows, you may drive it a day or two and, you know, whatever guy down in the lower bay at your oil change shop didn't put your drain plug on. You know, give it a week to, you know, everything. You don't want to be doing things last, you know, you don't want to be doing things, having the belts changed out on your rig and then jump on the road the next day. You know, you want to have a week or so for that stuff to soak in. I think, you know, trailer maintenance is huge. I've got my, my toy hauler that I'm going through this next week is written in my calendar. You know, start going through, because I know that there's some repairs that I need to make on that from, you know, a brutal and busy season last year all over the country. So, yeah, it's really, I mean, make yourself a list if you have to, and put things on your calendar and hold yourself to them.
I like that. And I love that saying, two is one. I did not serve myself, but I've worked at different times with a number of military guys. And I remember when I first heard that saying, and it is very true. Anything that's, you know, small, you know, I like to have, you know, whether it's a pocket knife or extra batteries or whatever it is, a pair of pliers. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that. Two is one is none rule. And I want to jump into that toy hauler that you talked about here in a minute. But I guess before we jump into that, I want to talk maybe some travel tips. You know, for maybe the guy that hasn't done a lot of travel. I know you're, you know, in East Texas, you've come to the East Coast a number of times. You've probably put as many miles on your car on some of those trips as anybody.
Right.
But sort of, I guess, lodging options, if you want to call it that, maybe some pros and cons. And I want to contrast sort of what I've done with what you do. Because I think there's pros and cons to each. I've done a lot of tent camping. That was kind of my way to start. And at least in my mind, you've kind of had camping, hotels, and sort of Airbnbs, and pros and cons with each. The tent camping for me, really, it's the benefit is why I did it is it's cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to cut whatever costs I can. You know, if I can pay 20 or 30 bucks a night or find a place that's even cheaper than that, you know, great. But then the trade-off is, you know, am I going to have electricity? What's going to happen if I run into inclement weather? It's no fun, you know, regardless of where you are, you know, laying down there in the tent when a raging thunderstorm or when it's, you know, I was trying to tent camp when we had that ice storm in Texas. That kind of threw a wrinkle in that.
we were up there for Chickamauga for the Bassmaster Championship last year, and we came back from the Classic. And instead of leaving, we both stayed because that storm was rolling in. And I remember that night I was like, all right, dude, like you're crashing in the back of the toy hauler because this storm's going to be legit. And that storm was crazy, you know? So having backup plans for inclement weather, like really, really bad weather. Cause if you're in a tent, man, I've done that. You know, when I first started doing some of the Hobies and traveling around, you know, I was up at, Dardanelle. You know, and it seemed like the weather looked good, you know, but then this kind of little front moved in and rolled in and it was super cold. I think that's the second time we met was at the ramp at Dardanelle. And I mean, it had gotten kind of cold. It had gotten down, I think in the 40s maybe, and just wet and man, you know, being in that tent, that was miserable. You know, it was not a good time to be in a tent because it was just raining just enough to make it just miserable. You know, it wasn't heavy. It was just, everything was wet.
Just
going down your list, like hotels. Hotels have always been kind of my least favorite on the list. And that's just in that's hotel dependent, area dependent, things like that. And I think that's the key to it is if you're going to stay in a hotel, you really need to kind of do a little research, look at the area you're in, look at, you know, the possibility of you going out there. I mean, because we've all heard the nightmares of people going out and, you know, a lot of the big boat guys, stuff like that. I think it was like Matty Robertson or somebody was out there like at a hotel and got like all his stuff ripped off, like everything. So, I mean, if you've got, you know, a good security system or some sort of protocols that you put in place in your boat or it's a good area or it's well lit or it really requires a lot of extra research. Like hotels was, they can be a little sketchy.
I agree completely.
Also, sometimes, you know.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't like it. Even the same chain, like in different location, it can be very different.
Yeah.
And I've had somewhere, you know, this last trip I stopped and I got there before my reservation in the campground and stayed one night in the hotel. And it's just, it's hard to find one that's kind of in the right area. And I've stayed in some, you know, trying to save money, stayed in some sketchy places where it's, you hope everything's there when you come back to the car. And then you run into situations where somebody gives you the key to the, you know, a room that's already occupied and you open the door. It's just, I tend to agree. It can work with hotels, but it's definitely hit or miss.
Yeah. And parking is usually an issue too, you know, for some of the smaller hotels.
If you're not car topping, it's tricky.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, man. It can be a little sketchy, but there are some. I mean, I remember staying at a hotel up around Kentucky Lake, and found a really cool one. It had great parking, like it was in a cool area. And I mean, they're out there, you know. So not necessarily bagging on hotels. I'm just saying that's, you know, if you guys are staying in hotels, just think of security and think of. That's the number one thing at hotels is just security of your stuff. I mean, plain and simple. Airbnbs. If you're going solo, they can be expensive, you know. But you've got, you know, usually a pretty good location. You've got decent parking. You know, you've got a full kitchen normally. So you can save on eating out. You can cook a lot. Which is nice, or finding like little small cabins, you know, like outside of the treacherous, you know, precipice cliff that we were on, that one that you and I stayed at in Smith Mountain. Yeah, like that was in the giant snakes and like, I mean, you know, but it had like a little kitchen, you know, like we were able to eat and it saved us a lot of money, you know, had places to park. It was safe. It was secure, you know, and with a couple people, you can really save some money. But if you're just getting started in this and you're starting to cruise around, like, you know, I find myself like sometimes teaming up with, you know, a couple of people, maybe three people at a good size Airbnb. And that's where I kind of like go, all right, let's stop. Cause you start getting in those houses that, you know, five people, six people, the things that you're going to run into there is parking for sure. You know, it's like you may have a spot that's, you know, 5 minutes away. Somebody may have a spot that's an hour away. But, you know, you're going to stop. You're getting ready in the morning or right in the middle of taking your morning devotional or whatever. And you got to go out and move your truck. So someone
get out.
Usually they only have, you know, a couple of bathrooms. So there's, you know, somebody used all the hot water, or, you know, somebody dropped one in there before it's your turn to shower, or, you know, it's, you wake up in the morning, you got to go, but somebody's in there taking a shower. You know, it's, yeah. You start running into the crowd things, kind of the dorm room kind of aspects of it. So Airbnbs, I would just say, keep it small, you know, like keep it to a couple people. Don't go, usually when you go for those big ones is where it usually gets kind of dicey, although they're fun. You know, we did one, it was a duplex in the middle of like some Children of the cornfield. It was an old farmhouse, like right on a little creek channel. And on one side was, there was like me and five other people. On the other side, there was, you know, I think three or four other people in that one. So parking was crazy, but it was cool to have everybody around, big backyard. You know, I remember one night I cooked a big pasta dinner for everybody. And like, you know, it was just a grand old time, you know. But so, yeah, keep it small in the Airbnbs. Camping, you know, usually great. I mean, it's, you know, as long as you've got that good tent, you've got the, you know, your system down, you've got contingencies in place for electrical access. You know, your stuff's not going to get ripped off when you leave during the day, cause you don't want to be setting up, and tearing down every single morning at 3:30 in the morning, to go fish, nor do the people who are camping around you want to deal with you setting up camp every night at 9 and tearing it down every morning at 3, you know. That was my original plan was I was going to do a rooftop tent, you know, just cause I thought what a cool way to go, you know. And, then it sank in one day that, man, I'm gonna have to tear this down every single morning, you know.
That was the exact same reason why I hesitated. I like the idea of sort of being self-contained. Mm-hmm. That, you know, even if it's just 10 or 15 minutes, like anything that I put in it now I've got to take out, and it just, mm-hmm. I like, you know, at least when I'm camping, I like being able to leave some stuff in the tent. I try to mm-hmm. take whatever I've got. I try to minimize what's in the car just to make it easier to get to everything. And the less stuff that I have with me, the better.
Ramps can be shady too. You know, I mean, who was it? Jackson Orr, or was it Ewing? It was somebody that was out there in Florida, got the taillights stolen off of their trailer. You know, I mean, like,
we've had catalytic converters disappear.
Yeah. I mean, like if you're relying on your truck to be your security device, you know, and you're parked at some remote ramp and in Florida, you know, like, or anywhere in the country, like that's not a tough target. You know, I mean, like, if somebody wants to get in there and take your stuff out of your truck, they'll empty you out. I mean, you want to talk about a life ending deal. Like, imagine all the things that, you know, somebody that's tent camping, for instance, has in their vehicle. If that were to get cleaned out when you come back to the ramp, game over, man. I mean, like you're done. It's,
yeah, plumbing rods and gear off people to fish the next day.
Well, and that's kind of led me, like, I'd done all those things for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years while I was traveling. And I was like, man, there's got to be a better way, you know. So, you know, that's when I started researching the interwebs. And I was like, there's got to be a trailer. But I like my trailer, too. You know, it's like I'm a trailer guy. I got a big, heavy boat. I'm, you know, 51 years old, and I've done a bunch of crazy crap my whole life. So my body's pretty beat up. I don't want a rooftop. I don't want a truck bed. Like, I like to rig my boat up, back it in the water, slide it off the trailer and go, you know? So I wanted to figure out a way that I could have a secure place to live, stay, have my mise en place, like I talked about earlier, so I could have a place for everything and my own little system. So I found this little trailer, I found a little Malone Echo Sport trailer that could roll in the back of it with my, you know, 13-foot, 9-inch long Jackson Kayaks NAR on it. And it would slide in there, and I mean, it was the perfect solution, you know. Saves me a ton of money. But that's kind of like a real one-off deal, you know. It's like I did a lot of math and a lot of drawings on like graph paper and stuff, going off of manufacturer drawings and like, you know, breaking out the old trigonometry skills. Like if I offset the boat on the trailer by 2.5 inches to the right, it should clear the bathroom door, you know. And I had it figured out, and I was like, oh man, this rig will work. I'm going to have an inch and a half of clearance on either side of the wheels, right? So it can roll in and make this tiny little turn for the trailer to fit in the trailer. I didn't take into account the bearing cover. So in reality, I only had a half inch on either side. So it was like so super tight, you know, but it's like at that point, I already bought this RV. I already bought this Malone trailer. I already built them, but you know, and I was like, dude, that was like so close to not working, but it did. It works perfect. You know, it's great. But you know,
it's really cool. You basically set up camp. You have your trailer, you know, restroom, beds, plenty of storage.
Yeah. But no, I mean there's a place for everything in there. You know, it's like and it's the same every single time, which is kind of like one of those things when we were hopping around and you and I and you know, Adam Patrone and all that, like we were staying in cabins. Every time you go in, it's a new setup and you gotta pile stuff somewhere, pile stuff here, pile stuff there. It's like when I go, I back my trailer into the space and it's not much more than a tent space, you know, maybe an extra 15, 20, 25 bucks. But I've got sewer, I've got electric, I've got, you know, water, I've got all the hookups. But I back that trailer in, set it up, drop the ramp. I can by hand pull my kayak and trailer out the back of that thing. And then I'm good. You know, I button it up. I've got a dining room table. I've got a kitchen. I've got a bathroom. I've got a bed. I've got all my stuff goes in the exact same place every single time. Mise en place, all in its place, you know, like, and it's super easy to work around and it just saves you a ton of money. I mean, it's, you can find a trailer like mine is a, Wolf Pup. Is what it is. It's a Wolf Pup 18 RJB, I think is what it is. I think it's like technically a 19-foot long toy hauler. So it's small, you know. But then you get into that maintenance too, you know. So you've got to make sure and winterize it and drain the lines and check the axles and carry an extra set of, you know, spare and different tools. And I mean, it's this whole other thing, but you know, I really enjoyed it. And I mean, we did, I think last season I did 30,000 miles and change. So, I mean, It's, you know, it's, we were cruising, you know, and only had one flat, you know, which turned out to be a double flat, which was fun. It's like my back left truck tire went, and then that took out the back left RV tire and It got spicy. But, you know, so you start thinking about jacks and tools, you know, impact wrenches and like, you know, having stuff around that you can do that on the side of the road while semi trucks are flying by your head, you know, 18 inches away. But, I really, really enjoy that. I mean, a little trailer like that, I think costs, you know, maybe 300 and something bucks a month. And when you look at what you're spending for a week of fishing every month, you know, the thing essentially, you know, kind of pays for itself. It kind of breaks even on you.
I think if you're going to use it a lot, if you're going to be traveling a lot, it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And we'll drop a link. I want people to be able to kind of go and check out the specs.
Yeah.
And that NAR is a pretty good sized kayak.
Yeah, it's big. Yeah, it's
a big. You've got something that's a little smaller, in all likelihood, it could fit into, you know, a setup similar to Lance's. Mm-hmm. And have you done YouTube videos or Instagram clips kind of showing off that before?
There's some clips of it on Instagram. I need to do a really good walkthrough of it. Maybe I'll do that when I'm getting loaded up for Lake Murray. So I will make sure and do that. So that you guys got to walk around when I'm getting it loaded up here at the shop and kind of do a little demo and also when we get set up in Lake Murray. So
So what's Instagram?
My Instagram's just Lance McWhorter Fishing. You know, look for that. And YouTube is ETX Paddle Sports. So yeah, you can find us on there, and I'll post it up to both.
Awesome. It really is cool. You know, I've gotten to see it up close and personal. It's really neat. And I guess for me, I think what I'm leaning to in terms of, you know, I'm starting to get away from the camping. There's like this last trip, you know, I did camp, but I'm more and more, I'm leaning towards, as I meet more people, the idea of getting a group of guys that, you know, real well, and getting a place, it's like, you kind of know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. And you're really able to, you know, for a few dollars more than what it would cost me for a campsite, I don't have to worry about the weather. I've got, you know, people that I'm staying with, you can kind of bounce ideas off. It makes it a lot of fun staying with guys. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely times where I like kind of being solo and doing my own thing, but it's definitely a fun experience with mm-hmm. guys that, you know, and it's, especially when you have enough guys to offset the cost to where it's really negligible compared to the camping. And I think that's the direction that I'm going to be moving to more and more as I've made more and more friends out there. It's, not everybody's always going to be the same. Thing,
yeah. Like you'll meet some buddies and you'll meet, I mean, there's even with the, with the little RV trailers, I mean, there's a few of us that always seem to kind of talk and figure out where we're going to be and, you know, wind up in the same hood, so to speak, you know? Just being able to have some people to just sit there and hang around with, you know, so you're not stuck out there in like just abject loneliness, like by yourself in a tent for like a week,
living like a hermit.
Yeah.
It's I don't know, for me, it can be good at times, but I definitely have, you know, as I've met more people, it's a lot of fun staying with those groups. And it's, you know, when you have a bad day on the water, you know, you get to talk to other people and it kind of, you know, takes away that sour taste, and mm-hmm. you're refreshed and ready to go at it again the next day. And it just really is a lot of fun. It's one of the cool things about, I think, the kayak community is there's a lot of great people. And, you know, if you're new to it, maybe you haven't met a ton of people yet, check out the Facebook pages. There's a lot of guys that'll, hey, anybody looking for a place, or mm-hmm. I'm looking for a place. And, you know, you can reach out and meet people and find a place to stay that way also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hobie BOS page or the Bassmaster Kayak Series page, always people, you know, looking. So that's a really good resource for either one of those. And and never be afraid to get out there and talk to people. You know, the kayak world is, I wouldn't say it's really well known for it, but maybe it's a little known fact that, you know, man, there's a bunch of friendly people in this sport, like that will really go out of their way to make you feel welcome. And, it's just a really good community. So, and never be afraid to ask people questions online, you know, or reach out to your local shop, or, you know, go in there and find some, you know, we got this little shop here in Tyler. And I mean, we have people all the time, coming in and wanting to learn how to tournament fish. And it's like, we're an open book, man. Like, we'll sit here, we'll show you everything, teach you how to use the apps, you know? So if it's something that you guys are dabbling, or thinking about getting into, you know, like, just get out there and ask questions. It's kind of the polar opposite of the boat world. Like, we like having people in our sport. We like fishing against each other. You know, there's not nearly as much, ego in kayak land. So please don't be afraid to go out there and talk to people.
Definitely. So last thing I want to jump into, I know we've got this Hobie BOS coming up on Rayburn, and that's mm-hmm. your neck of the woods.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't want to ask for spots or anything too specific, but I want to kind of get an idea of at least what your thoughts are on that upcoming tournament. We were talking offline, and you're still not sure whether you're going to be able to make it to that one or not.
Yeah, hopefully. It's, you know, being the restaurant guy, you know, staffing is everything. So, I mean, it just really kind of depends. And even if it is one that I can make, I know it's going to be one that I'm just going to have to bust down there, fish, and then probably drive back and finish out the night at the restaurant on Saturday, and then drive out early again Sunday morning and fish, you know, which is, done a bunch of times, you know, that's those 2 hours of sleep and on the ramp in the back of the truck kind of events. But, now in Rayburn, and it should be really good. You know, we just got a huge batch of rain come through in the last week. We're going to have some more this weekend. It's looking okay after that, which should be nice, and you know, kind of should have some good water conditions. Weather's been great. You know, we may, a lot of times we will get another cold snap in early February. So I mean, I'd be watching the forecast for that to see if we do have something moving in. But I mean, other than that, I mean, as long as the weather holds, it should fish great. You know, it's a fun lake. I fished there a million times. And it's just like any of these big largemouth reservoirs in the South. I mean, you know, they're going to be on wood, or they're going to be deep, or they're going to be around grass. So, I mean, it's just, and Rayburn is one of those spots that you should be able to find all of it. We didn't have a super hard winter like we were thinking. We had a couple really, really cold weeks that dipped into freezing. I haven't been out there since the cold snap, but I would bet that it's decent enough that we still had, you know, maybe even some pads, you know, that are still up on top. Just typical old Rayburn fish, you know, try and graph around, find you some grass, you know, cover a lot of water, you know, I think that this one, they're allowing motors on Rayburn. I
believe. They are.
So yeah, I mean, if you're out there and you've got some practice days, you know, with Rayburn, cover water. Like, there's going to be a lot of kayaks on there. There's going to be a lot of boats on there. It's a big lake. So, I mean, if you're one of those dudes that likes to get out in the middle of something and like sit on a brush pile, expect a lot of company, expect a choppy ride, expect, you know, crappie boats to come get right in the middle of your business, crappie guides. I think they're probably going to be starting to kick off a lot of stuff coming up in the next few weeks. So, I mean, really just watch for traffics, watch for conditions. And I mean, cause that lake can get, you know, in the big water, that lake can get dangerous pretty quick and get pretty choppy. But yeah, I think it's going to fish awesome. You know,
I know Hobie's been down there before, but at different times of the year. And I know AJ McCorder, no relation.
He's my cousin. I always call him cousin every time I see him. What up, cuz?
He was, you know, just from talking to him, he seemed very excited to be mm-hmm. there in the spring. And you know, I've never been to Rayburn. I've been to Texas a couple of times, but never gotten to fish that lake. It's kind of a really? Bucket list. Yeah, it's a bucket list place.
Yeah, I mean, do it. Make that drive. That's a good. It's I a wish. Good lake. You know, it's a good lake. It's just a pressured lake. You know, it's a very pressured lake. So, I would, if I could give people one bit of advice on Rayburn, it's be stealthy, be quiet, be, you know, because you may come into a little, you know, a little creek channel or something like that behind three other boats. And I can't tell you how many times I've come behind a row of boats making the merry-go-round in Rayburn and catching fish right behind them in a kayak. You know, I mean, it's just, and they get so mad and it's hilarious. And,
you
know,
I can't imagine.
What are you throwing? Oh, same thing you are probably, you know, bass stuff, you know, like I'm just doing it quiet. And so it's one of those lakes that we're being stealthy, I think, really helps a lot. You know, it's that would be the one little kind of juice trick that I would give anybody for Rayburn. And I think water levels should be pretty normalized right now. I haven't looked, but I think they should be pretty good. I mean, it was down a little bit, I think, for the last tournament that came through. I want to say it was maybe 4 or 5 foot down
back in the fall.
Yeah. And then it should be, you know, at least a couple foot back up with the rains that we had come through.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I think level should be pretty good. You're still going to have some timber in the water.
No crazy flooding this time though.
No crazy flooding. Yeah. That's what I was going to say next is Rayburn is a lake of extremes. So the last time that Hobie was down there, I believe it was the last time, we were 12 foot high, and, I'll have to send you a picture to crop into this thing here of, I've actually got a side imaging shot. Or maybe it was a down. I don't remember. I think it was a down imaging shot of a picnic table underwater. And like there was me, Jamie Broad, Blake. I don't remember who else was out there, but we were up in the campgrounds. Like literally, you could see like the trash hanging hooks, you know, and barbecue grills, and like literally got a full blown shot of a picnic table underwater. It was crazy.
Banging the crankbait.
Yeah. And I mean, if you can get up in the wood, if you can get up in the trees, you can get around any of that structure, man, those bass are on there. And, but it's just, you know, separating the rats from the studs. You know, I mean, like there's some big ones, but you got a lot of times you got to go through a lot of fish to find them.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate you sharing some Rayburn juice for, you know, I'm jealous that I'm not going to be able to make this trip. At some point I am going to make it to Rayburn.
We'll just come down and we'll go fish it.
That sounds good too. without as much kayak pressure anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And you guys don't beat up your fish in practice. Mark my words. Don't beat up your fish in practice. You're going to need them. You're going to need every one of them. Take the hooks off of everything.
That's good advice for anywhere.
Yeah. But especially there, anywhere. Especially there. If you guys beat it up, it will be very tough on Saturday and Sunday. Very tough.
Great advice. Well, Lance, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us some time. I want to give you a chance to, you know, if you want to talk about your shop or thank sponsors, or the floor is yours.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. We've had so many good times over the years, traveling all over the country and fishing together and hanging out and eating in crazy places. I mean, Justin and I learned together that when you're in Pennsylvania, you don't order a Yingling, you order a Lager. Apparently,
I forgot about that.
Rainstorms on water. I mean, we've been trapped in tornadoes, like we've been through it. So I'm super, super stoked to see you with the show. This guy is a wealth of information. So that is in an open book. So, I mean, myself, you know, it's like I don't post as much as I should. I keep trying to do a lot more, especially with the shop. But ETX Paddle Sports, we're right here in Tyler, Texas, which is about an hour and a half east of Dallas. It's like halfway in between Dallas and Shreveport. So if you guys are going to Rayburn, feel free to swing by if you're coming from the north, or stop by when you're heading out. Shoot me a message on, I mean, you can find me through, you know, that name's pretty unique. So, I mean, if you type that name in, you're going to find my fishing page, my chef page, the restaurant. My restaurant's called Culture ETX. We have a ton of people that come through in between tournaments and eat at the restaurant. It's a pretty cool spot, kind of upscale, but still laid back, dope food. I know like Joe McElroy, a bunch of people in there. Mark Cisneros from Bassmaster, the photographer, he stopped in with his girl and his friend. It was last Friday or last Saturday and had dinner and was like just stoked. He loved it. So if you guys ever want to swing by and eat some good chow around the lake, come on. We're talking about doing some pretty cool dinners in between Toledo and Lake Fork when the elite guys are coming through. You know, talking with John Cruz from Missile and trying to have like a missile event out there. But yeah, I mean, me personally, Lance McWhorter Fishing, Jackson Kayaks and Missile Baits, Newport Motors, Dakota Lithium Batteries, Stryker, God, Traeger Grills, Spearpoint Hooks, Dobbins Rods. It's like the people have, you know, just kept me in the goods for fishing for a long time, you know, and fantastic relationships with a lot of these companies. And, you can see, Amphibia Eyegear is another one that I've been with for like 4 years now. Love those guys. Great glasses. And you can see me at the Bassmaster Classic in their booth, throughout a couple of days throughout the Classic. And I'll probably be, you know, you'll find me in the Dakota Lithium booth hanging out with Stormy and Stormy Jr. I'm always out and about. So, you know, reach out. Let us know how we can help, how we can grow the sport. We do a monthly series out here, out of the shop, out of ETX Paddle Sports. We do a regular East Texas Trail Series event that's, you know, just great entry-level way to get into tournament kayak fishing. We have events starting pretty much every month, starting this next month. So we're going to be up on Welsh, which is a really killer power plant lake here in East Texas, next couple weeks from now. So those fish should be freaky right now with that hot water.
Awesome. And I see a lot of tackle over your shoulder there.
Yeah.
For guys that, you know, it's not just kayaking gear. If you need some, you need the goods, and you're headed down there for the BOS, it's definitely, definitely worth stopping by.
Yeah. And I mean, come by, talk fishing. If I'm not here, Ryan, is my shop manager. He'll be here. Or if you're coming through and you want to say, hey, let me know, shoot me a message, I'll come meet you. But yeah, we've got, it's a small tackle collection. It's growing, but it's all dialed in for the area. So, I mean, it is really, you know, you want some Rayburn stuff, like, I was going to grab one and show you, but I'm not going to do that because I still haven't decided if I was going to fish. Let's be like, oh, if you're going to Rayburn, here, try.
Don't give them too much juice.
Nah, I ain't going to do that. But if you come to the shop, we'd be more apt to talk, you know. But, yeah, it's a small collection. It's some really good brands. It's some brands that you can find at some big stores, but we've got the colors and we've got the ones that really are dialed into this. We wanted to build a neighborhood tackle shop. Because being a restaurant owner, being a tackle shop owner, like, I'm all about small businesses. So, you know, especially in the last couple of years have been pretty tough. Small businesses really rely on you guys' support, you know. So I know it's a lot of times it's easier to get on a big box shop and just order a bunch of stuff. But, man, we really love it when you come in and sit and hang out and talk fishing and, you know, pick up some stuff from a mom and pop shop. So, yeah, so support those local ones. There's some great ones down there around Rayburn too. So if you guys need some tackle on the way in, let us know. And there's, like I said, there's a bunch of them down there around. Like Zavala has a couple of good ones right there around the bridge on the way to Jasper. There's some couple good tackle shops. So yeah, support the local ones.
Awesome. Well, Les, thank you again for joining me. It's been fun, and we're gonna have to do it again.
See you in Lake Murray.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
All right, we're going to do some fishing. And last time we were out there, me and Adam Patron, we found a dope little like wing and beer joint. So you're buying.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, brother. We'll see you.
Lance McCorder, everybody. I always love talking to Lance. And like I said, he is definitely going to be a visitor here again. So we've reached the part of the show that we do every week. Kayak Fishing Kings and Queens of the Week. Now, we talked last week about highlighting some of the top finishers at the recent Hobie BOS down in the Harris chain, but I wanted to add in a couple of guys who maybe didn't get quite as much recognition, but still accomplished some pretty impressive feats. So my first King of the Week, Paul Armbrust. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Paul. But Paul, if you haven't seen it, we'll drop a link. Paul caught one of the biggest bass I've ever seen, probably the biggest bass I've ever seen on a catch board. He caught it in practice. Only thing that would have been better would to catch it during the actual tournament. But still, a fish of a lifetime. I've never caught one anywhere near that size. A 26-inch bass, 13 pounds. You actually weighed it. Again, just a absolute freak of a fish. So congrats to Paul, our first King of the Week. And then very similarly, Mr. Adam Reiser, our very first guest on Kayak Fishing Weekly, he caught his the day after the competition, or it may have been the same day of the competition, but after it was over, went back out, back on the water, and stuck into a 26-inch bass that was over 10 pounds. Just another freak fish of a lifetime. So congrats to Adam Reiser, our second Kayak Fishing King of the Week. And again, I want to thank Lance for coming on this week. Really enjoy talking to him. He will be a guest again. But that is the show for this week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you enjoyed it, tune back in next Thursday for another edition of Kayak Fishing Weekly on the Serious Angler Podcast Network.
Hey guys, appreciate you listening to that episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If your application that you're listening to this episode on allows it, please give us a rating and review. It helps us out big time, get shown more on the platform that you're listening to, and it helps us grow the show. And if you get some time, check out the other podcasts on the Serious Angler Network. And of course, have a great day.